The Homance Chronicles.
The female equivalent of a bromance.
So many poor choices.
But so many good types.
But so many poor choices.
It's Sarah, and it's the Homance Chronicles, and I'm really excited because it's Nicole's birthday today. She's actually recording with me on this monumental day of her life.
Yes, officially middle-aged. I am spending my 40th birthday on Zoom with you.
But you did some cool shit today because you're like getting ready to go to fucking Greece.
Yeah, I know. I really didn't, I don't know, care that much about the day before, whatever, like, since I had a party on Saturday and I'm leaving for Greece for weeks, so.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a Monday that we're recording. I mean, what are you going to do? Honestly.
No, you're not going to do anything but hang out with your BFF and record a podcast and pack for Greece. That's it. That's your 40th, yeah. Actual 40th birthday.
Yeah.
Oh, also, look at all the sweet gifts you got.
I was actually very overwhelmed by how many gifts that I got. Like, it felt very much like a bridal shower or something.
It was set up like something similar, for sure.
Yep. Well, I mean, not the setup, but just the fact that
gift table. You had a gift
so
table.
Many people actually bought me things because, like,
love you.
I know. It's so kind. Like, I don't put any pressure on it, right? I'm like, if you want to, if you feel like it, like, I don't.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way, because I'm like not good at giving gifts, so I don't expect people to give me gifts, you know?
Oh. Well, I don't expect people to give me gifts because I'm already asking for your time. Mm-hmm. I guess, like, since I invited people to a party and they were going to have to, you know, make time on their weekend, and a lot of people had to drive,
AKA
you know,
attend the party,
40-ish minutes, an hour or whatever, back and forth and whatnot. I don't know. I mean, plus I'm an adult, right? Like, but it was amazing to receive so many gifts, considering I was prepared to buy some of these things myself if I didn't get them, because their majority of the gifts that I requested were practical travel items.
You know, let me do my 40th by getting practical travel items.
Yeah. So at least I didn't have to spend the money on it.
I'm a practical lady.
You know?
But also, you will be traveling in the future too, so these are things you will need.
Well, right. It's not like one-time thing, obviously. Right. But I did have some friends that gave me some things that were not on my list that really pleasantly surprised me. So that was nice to have a couple in there where I was like, oh.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't follow the protocol.
Which I certainly didn't follow the protocol, because I'm taking you on an adventure when you get back. Spa Island or whatever the fuck I'm going to find.
I did get a gift card to a spa.
Oh, good. You can use it some other time. When you're feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah. So, my mom did an amazing job of coordinating, corralling, et cetera. And she was treating it like a bridal shower. So
I had to keep saying
no to things.
Yeah. No, I love the energy. I love the vibe. Con did a great job. And I did end up grabbing a gluten-free cookie.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was delicious. But anyway.
They were really good. I mean, they were actually, the gluten-free cookie and cake were both really good, to the point where I was like, are we sure things are gluten-free? Like, I'm a little nervous.
I know. They actually tasted good. So it's funny, because I looked on the bottom of the cookie, because you can tell at this point if there's a if the texture there, right? So if like it's real flour dough, then you can see that there's a seam where the dough overlapped and they rolled it out. When it's gluten-free dough, there's no seams. It's usually just like a pattern on the bottom because it was pressed. Yeah,
interesting.
So that's how I knew. And then I had Seth taste it to make double sure I wasn't in for a bad time. He's like, nope, that tastes like gluten-free to me. Because he still, he'll still eat the gloobs on occasion. You know, he can.
So, yeah, it was great to...
Wait, what else did you have to say no to?
Well, like she asked me if, like... if I was going to open my gifts, like, how was I going to open my gifts? Like, well, like she thought like a bridal shower, like I was going to open my gifts while
All right, gather around. We're going to do the gift opening now.
I was like, no, I'm not going to open my gifts.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. I didn't even think about that part. That would have been fucking funny, Nicole.
Yeah.
Why, everybody shut up. Nicole's opening her gifts.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you try to ride that line between like, grateful and not being a bitch, because the way that I am is very much different than the way that my mom is in regards to everything. Traditions and old school way of celebrating, right?
Yeah.
And she is very much stuck in
traditions,
that pattern, and I'm just like, no, I don't like doing any of these things.
Well, you know what, you let her do it for you at the higher level. And that's what counts the most. She did a great job. Who's joking? I was joking with Jamie that's like, you know, imagine if that was your wedding. I was like, no, that would have been Connie's wedding.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So, hey, she got to plan something really important and impactful for you. So that's mm-hmm. great. Mm-hmm. Fantastic job.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, it was just like little stuff. Like I wasn't going to wear a crown. I mean,
that's a hard no.
Yeah, well, and so it's all with the best of intentions,
mm-hmm.
but right. Yeah,
not your anyway. Jam, not your style, not your vibe. Hey man, it's cool. You were cozy, right. And you were super cute in your dress, and you had your sash on, which helped me find you all day.
Yeah, I did. I wore the sash. I did do that. I had my one piece of flair. So it just makes me think of Office Space, you know, because Jennifer Aniston was working at that like Bennigan's or Applebee's type restaurant, and they had to have like certain amounts of flair, you know. I'm like, I am definitely the Jennifer Aniston in this scenario of like, I think we've got enough.
Yeah, I think we've maxed out.
Guys. I think this is good.
We achieved our goal. We can move forward.
But it was pretty amazing to see. I don't know. I think it ended up probably being around like 45 people or something all come together.
It was a blend of humans. It was a good time.
Yeah. So it was my first time, though, really having to try to visit with that many people, or you know, stop by and chat with that many people.
Be
and
on purpose with everybody. Yeah,
so my throat actually hurt on Saturday from talking so much, like not having enough like water, like I couldn't eat and drink or like keep my water intake up while also maneuvering about and chatting with everybody and stuff. And so I got home on Saturday and I was just like, oh my God, my throat hurts. So,
oh, that's awesome. But you know,
that's how much I was visiting and enjoying everybody's company.
Yeah. But you killed it. You made plenty of rounds. We saw all those fun people that we love. And I got to meet some family members, which Jess, of course, introduced me as the other part of her podcast. And I was like, yep, nice to meet you. I say some pretty terrible things there, and I'm probably going to do it again today in real life. And they were just like, uh-huh. Nice to meet you.
Wow.
Heard, but it's nice to feed you too, Uncle.
They probably don't even remember that I have a podcast.
Yeah, who knows? It was funny though. It was a really good time. Really, really good time. So happy birthday, Miss Nicole.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to 40s.
Yeah. Prospects are looking pretty A-okay in your book right now.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, things just seem to get better every decade.
Yeah, you don't have kids. You're self-employed. You can literally do whatever you want, whenever you want, wherever you want. I mean, the world is your literal oyster at this point.
Yeah, it's a little overwhelming. Quite daunting, actually, sometimes.
Yeah. Did you sleep at night?
Sure do. Sure do. Except for the occasional spin out where I'm like, what am I doing with my life?
That's right. You panic for nearly 24 hours and then things for some reason just settle back down. You're like, ah.
There's the occasional spin out.
Right before actually, your period.
When I was talking to my therapist, I said, you know, like, I am like, what am I doing? Like, what do I want to do? Like, it does. It feels like a weird plateau / transition. I don't know. And so it's very midlife crisis-ish. And she was actually not like excited, but she reacted in a way where she was almost expecting me to say something. Because apparently it's very common to kind of have thoughts about like what's my purpose?
Wait, what am I doing again? Why am as I you, here?
As you come on the precipice of right. being 40.
I don't know. I feel like we were told when we were younger, or like I maybe watched my parents do this, where my dad was a tradesman. But my mom was in corporate America, and so was Peach and my uncle who lived next door. So, like, I always thought you were supposed to get, like, a, you know, big girl job and work there and pay your bills, and that would afford your fun life that you wanted to live. And so that's where I am still currently. But it's not helping me afford the fun life I wanted to live. It's just I'm surviving.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, little Sarah is stoked because in theory we made it, right? But then right now Sarah's like, but inflation.
Right. And you know, being the typical millennials that we are, and I'm a cusper truly, so I have
that video I sent you.
I don't know which one you're talking about.
I'll send it again.
But I have lived through multiple recessions, pandemics. I mean, swine flu. You name it. And
swine, anthrax. Can't forget anthrax.
And my generation has been in it. We've gone through, you know, bankruptcy and like multiple times.
I feel like we're that era. Well, maybe
we survived like, low fat cream cheese. I mean,
God,
we have really
the Atkins diet.
We've been through some things.
We've seen some shit. Genuinely have seen some shit. Like,
yeah,
I feel like we're so. There's this chick on Instagram who is the generation before millennial, and she's like, We're this last generation of fuck around and find out in real life. Like, we will
hit
you.
Gen Xers. Yeah. That's what I said. I'm a cusper, so I have like a little bit of both. I know.
Well, same. Yeah. Cause it's like, good Lord, I was in Latchkey. My parents weren't always around, but my sister had my parents. So it's like, my sister's more of a millennial than I am because she had that real millennial experience. Whereas, like, I got locked out of the house when I was little. I got put into Latchkey when I was like 10, 12 years old already. Before then, no sir, no ma'am. We were riding solo on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I wasn't allowed in the house in the summertime, mm-hmm. like all sorts of fun stuff. Drinking from the hose. Again, not yeah. allowed in the house.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I've seen those videos where they're like, You drank from the hose because that's what was available.
Right. It wasn't a choice. Mm-hmm. It was access. It's either you don't or you.
I feel like I was babysitting other people's children when I was 12.
I was.
And now people are like, they're 12. I got to keep the camera on. I got to know exactly what's happening. Like,
yeah, like, why are you coddling them? I'm pretty sure this bitch over in 1912 at 12 years old decided she wanted to be a dancer for the rest of her life. And that's what she did. Like, yeah. I think 12 years old is actually that stage where you got it figured out. It's just now they're playing that game of how much can I get away with being a child still. That's really what's happening.
So
anyway,
speaking of women who make life altering decisions,
I got one.
At 10 years old, like changing their name or supporting the family. Yeah.
On a whim.
Yeah. All of a sudden, they're going to be a queen. Who do you have for us today?
Well, we have Miss Nellie Bly. You've never heard of her?
No.
But she actually did. She was like a jack of all trades, maybe almost a little bit. Like, I started looking into her and recognized that I wanted probably to do a 2 to 3 parter on her just because, like, she was so iconic in my world after reading it. But we'll get into the high level, short and sassy of it all.
Okay. I'm ready.
Yeah. So, Ms. Bly. So, Nellie Bly, she was born May 5th, 1864. She was born Elizabeth Cochran, Elizabeth Jane Cochran, and she's known for several things. She took a trip around the world in 72 days to emulate the fictional character from Phileas Fogg, the book Around the World. And what is it? 90
are you
days?
Saying full sentences?
Yeah, no, my brain's malfunctioning. I'm like stroking out because I had it all
like,
in my head.
What?
So, the guy that wrote this Journey to the Center of the Earth and the Around the World in 90 Days or whatever that book was, she wanted to emulate that fictional character, and so she went around the world in 72 days. So she was
first
for that, and she was a woman.
Okay,
second,
gotcha.
She did an expose where she worked undercover to report on a mental institution from the I need to take my treatments tomorrow. I should have taken my medication. This is part of myasthenia gravis. You sound loaded, but your tongue's just sticky. I'm sober. That's the worst part. Okay, so she did an expose where she worked undercover to report on a mental institution from the inside, which in turn launched a new kind of investigative journalism. And I wrote, go queen.
Oh my god.
So she was born in Pennsylvania in Cochran Mills, which is now Burrell Township, Armstrong County, Pennsylvania. So, the background. Her dad, Michael Cochran, who was born in 1810, he started as a laborer and mill worker. He actually ended up buying the land around the mill itself, and most of the land surrounding the farmhouse. So, he would later become a merchant, a postmaster, and associate justice at Cochran Mills, which was obviously then named after him. So he established himself and he created a life for himself. He created his own money. He didn't lose it. Remarkable.
Yeah. What year is this?
1810. Between 1810 and 1864. So he was hustling. He was moving and grooving.
Okay.
Ready for this? He was married 2 times. The first marriage, he had 10 fucking kids, 10 of them with Catherine Murphy. I don't know what happened to Catherine. Then he got married and had 5 more with Mary Jane Kennedy. No slouch there. She was his 13th child, and unfortunately, she was 6 when he passed.
Wow.
So, but she had, again, she came from affluence, if you will, Cochrane Mills.
Mm-hmm.
She was often called pink due to wearing it all the time. But as she got older, she wanted to be more sophisticated. So she dropped the pink nickname and went ahead and changed her surname to Cochrane, spelled with an E at the end. I don't know how it's enunciated. I imagine there's some sort of hyphen or whatever the fuck at the top of the E, Cochrane. I don't know what they're trying to do. But to me, in the English language that is right now, it's the same name, just with an E at the end.
Okay.
So I didn't really dive into a lot of her personal life stuff either, because she had done so much. So if you guys are curious about her personal life, you can certainly Google her and find a ton more. She was a sass pot, though. So in about 1879, she enrolled in Indiana Normal School, which is now Indiana University of Pennsylvania. But she was only able to go for one term because they didn't have any money. And then by 1880, her mom moved them, the family, to Allegheny City, which is now part of the city of Pittsburgh. So they moved out of the Cochrane Mills establishment and went on and moved into the city. So by 1885, how old is she at this point? 20-ish something years old. When they were in the city, there was a paper called the Pittsburgh Dispatch. It was a publication that had a column in it titled "What Good Girls Are For," stating girls were principally for giving birth and keeping the house. The fury. Like, I'm furious about it. Nellie was even more furious about it. But she was still going by Elizabeth by then, by the way. She was so furious that she responded under the pseudonym Lonely Orphan Girl. And in what she wrote, the editor was very impressed with her passion and offered her an opportunity to write a piece for the newspaper under the same name. She took him up on the offer, and her first article was called The Puzzle Girl, or The Girl Puzzle, that argued that not all women would marry, and what women actually needed were better fucking jobs.
Amen.
Yes. Her second article was called Mad Marriages, and it was about how divorce impacted women. She argued for reform of divorce laws. Because I think that back in the day, when they got divorced, when people got divorced, men got everything and left women high and dry with the children, basically.
That is one scenario. The other is that from what we know of previous stories, men don't have shit. And then they get off with not having to provide support and get their shit together.
There's that also. Yep. There's that lens too. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So a lot of the stories that we've read from the early 1900s is that the guy gambled his money away, or he had bad investments, or he thought that he was a businessman, but he really wasn't. And so when there was divorce, he had nothing to give, but he also wasn't ordered by a court to figure it the fuck out. The women did. And then that's why you have women, or girls, I should say, because let's say they're 10, starting to support a family.
Yep. But yeah, so she was furious. She wrote in. Obviously, she was a proponent of women's rights. And in her second article, it was published under the byline of Nellie Bly, not Lonely Orphan Girl. It was very common for women to use pen names, and her editor was inspired by the popular song Nellie Bly. However, the editor wrote Nellie with an IE at the end instead of a Y by mistake, and it stuck. So there is a song called Nellie Bly, but it's spelled NELLY. After the article, the editor was incredibly impressed and actually offered her a real job. So at this stage, she's working at the Pittsburgh Dispatch. In early times, she focused on the lives of working women and wrote a series of investigative articles on women in the factories. So she would go and talk to them and figure out, you know, what's going on, talk about things being disparaging, and then write about it. But eventually, the newspaper received so many complaints from factory owners, she was redirected onto the women's pages to cover fashion, society, and gardening. The more typical role for women journalists at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I lied. She was only 21 at the time. She was really pissy about it. And she decided to do something no girl has done before. That's a direct quote. So what did she do? She went to Mexico to serve as a foreign correspondent. She spent nearly 6 months living and reporting on the lives and culture of the Mexican people she was with. In one report, she protested the imprisonment of a local journalist for criticizing the Mexican government. You can imagine, she didn't really stay for that much longer. Because the authorities learned of the article.
I was like, yeah, there's a hit on her life.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, she was corresponding to the United States. So it took mm-hmm. a minute for the Mexican government to catch wind of the article. So she had a little bit of lead time there. But once the authorities learned of the article, they threatened arrest. She fled immediately and she made it home safely. Then she accused Porfirio Diaz, who was the dictator at the time, of being a tyrannical.
No, like a tyrant, like a tyrannical, I guess. Yeah.
So that tyrannical czar suppressing the people and controlling the press. Later, her articles would be published in a book called 6 Months in Mexico. So she made it out of Mexico. She was only here for 6 months.
Okay.
1887, she came back.
I wonder who she found to fund this for her.
The Pittsburgh Dispatch did.
Oh, they did.
Okay. Yeah. They sent her down to be their journalist, like a correspondent journalist, because, you know, they didn't have the news on TV or anything like that. So that's like world reporting, essentially.
Okay.
Yeah. So in 1887, she came back to Pittsburgh Dispatch after and was put on theater and arts reporting. She fucking hated it. And so she left New York City. Like within the same year, she was like, no, fuck this, I'm out. So she then decided to move to New York City as well. So in 1887, she moved to New York City. She tried for several months to gain a job in journalism and could not break through since she was a fucking woman. After about 4 months, she ended up talked her way into the offices of New York World, which was ran by John Pulitzer. So this is the Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah.
She gained an undercover assignment. Ready for this? She agreed to feign / act insane to investigate the brutality and negligent ongoings at the Women's Lunatic Asylum on Blackwell's Island, now named Roosevelt Island. Bum, bum, bum.
I wonder how she knew how to act that way.
Here we go. You ready? It was not easy for her to do this. She first checked herself into a boarding house called Temporary Homes for Females.
Very literal.
No mistaking that.
Yeah.
So she kept herself up all night to give herself that, I'm quoting, wide-eyed look of a disturbed woman. And then while she was there, she started to accuse the other boarders of being insane.
Yeah, nothing like throwing off your circadian rhythm to make you go nuts. Or at least appear that way.
Right, exactly. It's so funny. Gosh, I wish I would have actually come across this other article that I've got. before it was done because she's something else. I just saw one of the notes I wrote. I am off for New York. Look out for me. Fly. That was the only thing she said. That was the note she left on the fucking table and she bailed. So, yeah. So then she's in this boarding home. She's accusing others of being insane. She told the assistant matron, there are so many crazy people about and one can never tell what they will do. She then refused to go to bed, eventually scaring the shit out of so many boarders that the police were summoned to take her to the courthouse. Intentional menace. Engage.
So I'm assuming that this temporary boarding house is either going to put you on the path to criminal, you go to jail, or you get claimed to be insane. Yes. It's like your options are we kick you out of here and you go into a cell for criminals, or you go into a cell for those who are mentally incapable.
One or the other, you're getting fucked over. Okay, so she successfully confused, or I should say duped, the woman in the temporary home for females, the police officer that came to take her to the courthouse, the judge who ordered her to be put at the home, and the doctor that did her medical evaluation. They all deemed she was crazy enough to take her to the asylum. Like,
maybe she picked up something when she was attending all those theater shows and doing
maybe. I don't know
because
if she
that's
actually
like,
attended.
That's quite the acting job to never fall out of character and at no point just kind of snap out of it and be like, wait, is this what I really want to do?
But yeah, so she went ahead and acted like a lunatic for a minute. Got herself into the actual asylum itself. She was there for 10 days. So she was able to experience the atrocious conditions firsthand. She was released thanks to the newspaper she reported for. So they came and saved her. And she published a report on October 9th, 1887. She says, and I quote, but here let me say one thing. From the moment I entered the insane asylum, the insane ward on the island, I made no attempt to keep up my assumed role of insanity. I talked and acted just as I do in my normal life. Yet strange to say, the more I sanely talked and acted, the crazier I was thought to be by all except for one physician whose kindness and gentle ways I shall not soon forget.
Huh.
Right. Sounds like a Black Mirror episode.
Well, yeah, I'm like, what was the purpose of going back to sounding like a sane person?
Because she, at that point, wasn't trying to be in there. She just wanted to report out firsthand on what was going on. So she wasn't trying to convince anybody at that point. She was already in the system.
Yeah.
And
I guess she's just, as an observer, she didn't need to. I was thinking it as like them literally treating her.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it took them 10 days to get her out. So, okay. So some sources say it was reported on, or report was out on the 9th, and some say it was on the 10th. But it originally appeared in as a two-part illustrated series. The first one was called Behind Asylum Bars, and it was an expose on the abuses that the island had ongoing. And the next installment was published on October 16th, titled Inside the Madhouse. So she had kind of like a, you know, what is it called? Centerfold, if you will, two separate times for this article. And the actual fame that she acquired, well, the sensation that it prompted first, caused the asylum to implement reforms that brought her lasting fame. So before, the budget appropriation for the Department of Public Charities and Corrections was only at $1.5 million. When she was done, it was bumped up to $2.34 million, and $550,000 was specifically designated for Blackwell's Asylum. Fortunately, 7 years after the expose was published, the asylum closed. So that report, too, was eventually published in a book called 10 Days in the Madhouse, or At a Madhouse. I typed it wrong, and I don't know where it's at anymore. But she had, this is a quote, she had a significant impact on American culture and shed light on the experiences of marginalized women beyond the bounds of the asylum, and she has ushered in the era of stunt girl journalism. So with that literal stunt she pulled, she created a whole new facet for journalists, or a whole new arena, if you will, for journalists to kind of participate in, because nobody had ever done that before. So she was the first. Also, she went under the alias Nellie Brown, not Nellie Bly, when she was going through all of this. So that was the other thing, too, is she wasn't doing it under her own name, air quotes. So by 1893, she was actually able to use her celebrity status, and I'm doing air quotes, celebrity status, to schedule an exclusive interview with the allegedly insane serial killer, Lizzie Halliday, whose story is absolutely fucking insane. I highly recommend somebody go and look them up, or just one of us do the story. She's a nutbag. So I'm going to go into that. So I couldn't go any further. I wanted to do her story instead after that.
Oh my gosh. Well, she sounds more like a true crime story.
100%. Yep. So, and I'm going to quote from the biographer Brooke Kroger. She argued her two-part series in October was a sensation, effectively launching the decade of stunt or detective reporting, a clear precursor to investigative journalism, and one of Joseph Pulitzer's innovations that helped give new journalism of the 1880s and 1890s its moniker. The employment of stunt girls has often been dismissed as a circulation-boosting gimmick of the sensational press. However, the genre also proved women with their first collection, collective opportunity to demonstrate that, as a class, they had the skills necessary for the highest level of general reporting. The stunt girls, with Bly as their prototype, were the first women to enter the journalistic mainstream in the 20th century. So, by her doing that one thing, she changed so much for the women that were trying to follow in her footsteps, essentially.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, thankfully she didn't get hurt or,
right,
I don't know, wrongly medicated or whatever. I mean,
wrongly medicated. Sit still, stab.
I mean, it sounds dangerous to an extent. Like,
honestly, I want to read like the actual articles, because she does identify like the conditions of neglect and abuse. Some patients were mentally ill. Some just needed professional care, and others were just sent there by their families. So it's like,
yeah,
they had so many random things happening.
I mean, and there's only so many people who have the balls to sit across from somebody who murders people.
There's that also. Yeah. There is that. Somebody might be because a little too insane.
Serial killers weren't even really given the name or an archetype until 1970s, when male FBI agents, and it's like, okay, well, Nelly sat down with a woman who could have just attacked her from across the table.
Seriously. Absolutely.
A long,
insane.
Long time ago.
So, yeah.
So it's kind of ridiculous that it took like 100 years to even get the recognition that a serial killer is a name and is a thing, and that there's which there's, I mean, maybe I'm wrong about my timing. I don't claim to be.
No, you're right. Historian, no, you're 100% right. Yep.
But no.
So just so we went back to her, Lizzie Halliday was an Irish American serial killer responsible for the deaths of 4 people in upstate New York during the 1890s. In 1894, she became the first woman to be sentenced to death by electric chair.
Yeah.
Not bad. But I'm sure she was pushed mentally, at her edge. She was on the brink of crazy.
But yeah, you don't hear about this work that Nelly did.
No.
It took literally like almost 100 years, like 80 to 100 years before it became mainstream information and is due to men in the FBI.
Oh, well, here we are. You know, maybe in 100 years, we're going to be known for something powerful. By the masses.
Well, I'm sure that there's female psychologists and things, too, who deserve credit 100%. And recognition for probably journaling about these types of women or murderers or whatever. But
nobody
yeah.
In an authoritative role was there to deem it or coin it. Yeah, it makes sense.
Anyway, I'll get off my
soapbox. All right. I mean, as long as you're comfortable getting off, because you can get back on as long as you want. So by 1888, she suggested to her editor that she take a trip around the world, attempting to turn the fictional story Around the World in 80 Days from 1873.
Yeah.
into fact.
Okay.
Muscle memory. So a year later, on November 14, 1889, at 9:40 a.m., after only 2 days of notice in Hoboken, New Jersey, she boarded the Augusta Victoria. It was a steamer of the Hamburg American Line, and she started her 40,070-kilometer journey. While she was traveling around the world, she couldn't report out as often, and the paper started a Nellie Bly guessing match game in which readers were asked to guesstimate when she would arrive down to the second. And in turn, the grand prize was a trip to Europe and some money to spend while they were there. So she went through England, France. She met Jules Verne, the guy that wrote the book. And she went to the Suez Canal. She went to Ceylon. She went to the Straits settlements of Penang and Singapore, Hong Kong, and Japan. So she went all kinds of different places. And after 72 days, she was back in New York. She circumnavigated the globe and traveled alone for almost the entire trip, which is kind of badass. She held the world record for just a few months, and then George Francis Train did the journey in 67 days. So fuck you, George Francis, for stealing her thunder. She did it first. I know.
People can't see, but I was just shaking my head.
Yeah, and so when she got back, her fanfare was so great that she was able to quit reporting and took a very lucrative job writing several novels for the weekly newspaper New York Family Story Paper. Again with these names,
literal. Yes.
Then between 1889 and 95, she wrote about 11 novels. Unfortunately, only a few papers survived, and the novels were almost lost until 2021, when an author called David Blixt announced he had discovered them in Monroe's British Weekly, the London Story Paper. So I didn't dive any further into those, but thankfully a majority of her works were found.
Huh. That was only a couple years ago.
So although she did write through 1895, she returned to New York World to report here and there on occasion. So in 1895, she also married millionaire manufacturer Robert Seaman. Thus, the last name Seaman.
Mm-hmm.
I
wonder how they met.
Who knows?
I'm just like, I'm picturing the canoodling that was going on between those two.
Right. Well, my favorite part is there's a little bit of an age gap.
Yeah. There. Yeah.
Little bit of an age gap. So somebody somewhere says that she was 21. I think she was like 31-ish at this time.
She had to have been.
Yeah. And he was 73.
She was 21 when you were telling us that she did her like first.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right.
So there's no way.
No. Yeah. So she was 73.
Yeah.
Since he was ancient and his health was failing, she left writing to succeed her husband as the head of the ironclad manufacturing company making steel containers such as milk cans and boilers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, girl, get it.
Mm-hmm.
He passed away in 1904, and that same year the company started manufacturing the steel barrel that was the model for the 55-gallon drum that is still widespread used today in the U.S. and other places. Some people claim Bligh was the inventor, but the actual patent was registered to Henry Wurhan. So it's very possible she had a part to play because she, too, was a patent holder. She held two. One was for a novel milk can, and the other one was for stacking garbage cans, both under her married name, Elizabeth Cochrane Seaman. At one point, though, she was the leading woman in the like group of leading women industrialists in the U.S. However, she was a little negligent. And one of her factory workers embezzled some money, which resulted in the ironclad manufacturing company to go bankrupt.
Dang.
I know. So, per her biographer, Brooke Kroger, again, quoting, she ran her company as a model of social welfare, replete with health benefits and recreational facilities. But Bligh was hopeless at understanding the financial aspects of her business and ultimately lost everything. Unscrupulous employees bilked the firm of hundreds of thousands of dollars, troubles compounded and protracted in the costly bankrupt litigation. So again, she was for the people, but she wasn't good at the like paperwork side of things.
Yeah, she might not truly have an understanding, though, of how to keep track of finances for a company that's like that. I mean, and at some point she's taking guesses or she's trusting the wrong people or whatever, because that language that goes into the accounting of a company that's buying raw materials and whatnot, I can only imagine that she's just like, okay, you want 50 cents for steel? Okay.
But yeah,
100%. Like, I don't even know what that means. I just made that up. Like, that could be ridiculous. Like, somebody listening might be like, what are you talking about? But
yeah, for an ounce of it, sure, that works.
Yeah, but, you know, unless she had trustworthy people she could fact check with, I don't know how she would be expected to know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that it was just the employees that she had running. She didn't have respect because she was a woman, so they took her money. Okay.
Well, not only that she was a woman, but she inherited it, and you know.
Yeah.
They saw vulnerability.
Agreed. Completely agreed. So, by 1913, she covered the women's suffrage procession for the New York Evening Journal. The article called Suffragettes Are Men's Superiors, and she let me try this again. The article was called Suffragettes Are Men's Superiors. And she accurately predicted within the article that women wouldn't see the ability to vote until 1920. So, you know, that was 7 years later. She was right. She also wrote stories on Europe's Eastern Front during World War I, as she was the first woman to go. What did I write there? She was the first woman. There we go. She was the first woman and one of the first foreigners to visit the war zone between Serbia and Austria. She was arrested as she was mistaken by British spy. So we're like, are you a Brit? Are you a spy? And she's like, no, I'm an American journalist. We're like, yep, you're a British spy. And they arrested her.
Well, we've covered a couple of stories where women got away with being spies because they weren't expected. And at this point, I'm sure there were officials and governments that were catching on because there were so many females who had gotten away with it.
Right. Exactly. her unfortunate demise came in January of 1922 on January 27th, 1922. She passed by pneumonia at age 57 in St. Mark's Hospital in New York City. And she is now at the Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx, New York. So
it's so crazy to think that somebody who was able to travel the world by themselves
got pneumonia
would get taken out by pneumonia.
Yeah, a little rattle in your lungs, huh?
It's wild.
I know. And it's kind of like, kind of a dick move, universe.
Yeah, and I don't know what the average lifespan was for that.
Not that long.
That time frame, but still 57 sounds a little young.
Yeah, well, I mean, her husband at the time died when he was in his 70s, so I have to imagine it was somewhere around that part. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds a little young to die from pneumonia. You're like, yeah. Was there something else happening?
Who knows? Who knows? Like I said, I wanted to get more into her personal life, but like the actions that she had were very important too. But there's a lot of things extracurricular outside of this. So there was a board game called Round the World with Nellie Bly that was created in 1980 and is named in recognition of her trip. The Nellie Bly Amusement Park in Brooklyn, New York City was named after her, taking its theme Around the World in 80 Days. The park reopened in 2007, and under new management, they renamed it Adventurers Amusement Park. So it was only just recently, within the last 30 years. God bless. That was a long time ago. Oh my God. It's 2023. In my head, 30 years ago is still the 70s. So,
right. I know.
A large species of tarantula from Ecuador was actually named after her in her honor in 2022 by the archaeologists. A fireboat named Nellie Bly operated in Toronto, Canada in the first decade of the 20th century. From early in the 20th century until 1961, the Pennsylvania Railroad operated an express train named the Nellie Bly on route between New York and Atlantic City, bypassing Philadelphia. So she had a tugboat. Nice. She had a tugboat, a board game, a route. She has been featured as a protagonist in novels by the David Blix guy who found her stories, Marshall Goldberg, Dan Jorgensen, Carol McCleary, like 4-6 other ones. She was a fictionalized account in the 2010 comic book Julie Walker is the Phantom. She is one of 100 women featured in the first version of the book Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls. Let's see. She had a ton of film and television stuff happening around her. She was portrayed in several different films throughout time, starting in 81. It's the first one I think that I've seen. It was called Adventures of Nellie Bly. And then in 2015, 10 Days in a Madhouse and Escaping the Madhouse, the Nellie Bly story, which happened in 2019. The Center for Investigative Reporting also released a Nellie Bly Makes the News, a short animated biological film. A fictionalized version of Bly as a mouse named Nellie Bree was a central character in the animated film American Tale, The Mystery of the Night Monster. List goes on. She was also the subject of season 2, episode 5 of The West Wing, in which the First Lady Abby Bartlett dedicates a memorial in Pennsylvania in honor of Nellie and convinces the president to mention her and other female historical figures during his weekly radio address. She was the subject of 2 episodes on the Drunk History series on Comedy Central. I can't wait to listen to those.
Yeah, I bet. It's interesting that she's been mentioned so much in mainstream media, you know, during times that we've been alive and an adult to actually recognize it, but still are unfamiliar.
I agree. She's got kind of all sorts of accolades. She was a subject of a few musicals. She was in 98, she was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame. She was one of four journalists honored with a U.S. postage stamp Women in Journalism set in 2002. In 2019, the Roosevelt Island Operating Corporation put out a call for artists to create a memorial art installation for Roosevelt Island. And the winner was announced in 2019. The piece is called The Puzzle Girl Puzzle, and it opened to the public in 2001 or 2021. Yeah, pretty freaking cool. The New York Press Club, they have an annual Nellie Bly Cub Reporter Journalism Award to acknowledge the best journalistic effort by an individual with 3 years or fewer of professional experience. And in 2020, it was awarded to Claudia Izzarani, a point of the city, which I don't know what that means, but pretty important. And then I believe that's, you know, that's pretty much it. We can wrap it up there. She was a pretty remarkable lady, had a lot going on and made a very huge impact on history, but she's just not that well known again.
Well, thank you for sharing her story, because that is wild. I can't imagine at that time that she was growing up and being 21 in the late 1800s and being like, fuck all y'all.
I'm going to the insane asylum. I'll eat dicks.
Oh, wow. Well, you know what'll happen now is that I'll hear her name all over the place.
Right? As soon as we start looking for it, Nellie Bly is going to show up.
Yeah. Yeah. How cool, though.
Right? So cool. Like, she struggled for sure, but she made it work, and it was merely gumption. That's it.
Because I mean, nuts. Not only did she kick off certain types of investigative reporting as a woman, but just in general,
yeah,
as a human,
like, so nobody thought, hey, I should act to get more info from people. That's a good idea. Let me go undercover as a crazy person.
Yeah, right.
I just,
well,
like,
thank
how
you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I personally just like how the more sane she was once she made it in, the more insane everybody else thought that she was. Like, nope. I see
their paradigm is very off. They're in a parallel universe there.
Right. I know. I see you putting on an act. Eat these pills.
Now.
I'm not crazy.
Oh, man.
I'm just thankful that the newspaper The World got her out of there before she had to, like, be there forever permanently, because things would not have changed.
no yeah, like I said, that takes a lot of balls. So
most balls. The most balls.
Wow. Well, fun little birthday story for me today. I appreciate it. It's at a girl time now, where we pat ourselves on the back for something good that we've done or that's happened to us. So obviously I've had a lot of great things happen to me. So as an at a girl to myself, it's the fact that I've maintained
40 years.
I've maintained so many friendships and connections and have a extremely loving family that I was able to celebrate with so many people that I care about. And I mean, I would have actually loved to have invited more. But when I started thinking about it, like, the newest friend that was at that party, like the person that I had known the least amount of time, was like 10 years. So mm-hmm. these people have been in my life for forever. Like, yeah. My friends are 20 years, 25. Yeah, they're, yes. And so I'm just,
You taught me how to be a friend. I'm going to say it again. You taught me how to be a friend. You taught me how to be a good friend. So I'm not surprised that you have a gaggle of humans that are at the best caliber of humans for you as a friend, because you are a good friend.
Well, thank you.
You deserve the best because you are the best.
Yeah, well.
No, thank you.
I mean, I still keep in contact casually with like some people that I went to school with, but not like a ton. So some people might be saying, well, I have friends from, all my friends are from middle school or high school or whatever. I feel like that's actually very rare.
Yeah.
And a lot of my friendships were formed as more like a young adult. And it's pretty incredible that we've been able to grow together. That I'm 40 and I still have the same friends I had when I was 20, you know?
Right. I like to call us intentional friends.
Well, yeah. And I mean, part of the reason also that there wasn't anybody there that I've been friends with for like less than 10 years is because I am team no new friends as well.
We're booked. Thank you. We're booked solid.
I actually did invite a couple of people though who have become more recent friends over the last couple of years or whatever. They just happened to not be able to attend. But I very much am like, my cup is full. And I have the privilege and the honor to be like, I don't need any more friends.
Oh.
I was able to get 50 people to come together on the middle of Saturday afternoon. And all
and we stayed forever. We all stayed for the full 3 fucking hours. Like we were all there for the whole time.
That's I know
extra. Cause that's how much we love you. So yeah, team no new friends. You keep that up, sis. We don't need any new people in our lives. I'm the last one. I'm the gatekeeper.
Actually, I think it's my either my friend Michelle that I met from doing yoga, which that might be 10 years, or my friend Trisha, who was my old neighbor. Both of them are like, I met them kind of around the same time, or I not met, but like became more friendly with them around the same time. So those two are like the newest.
Yeah. But they're still
that like, were there.
I've known them for almost 10 years. Shit.
I know.
So funny. Well, my Atta girl isn't so warm and fuzzy.
Oh. It's still supposed to be positive, though.
Like... No, it's positive for sure, because I made progress. So my garden.
You're really going to have to start picking new ones.
Well, you're right. Here's why.
You've almost...
It's almost fall time.
You've almost ran out of varying garden options.
Well, here, I actually worked on this shit today. So the garden had a cucumber wall, if you will, and the cucumbers were not doing well because of the weather. So they got fungus and bacteria and they quit producing fruit. And I just kind of sadly watched it die for, I don't know, 2-3 weeks, because the weather we've had in Michigan hasn't been good and hot and, you know, able to help these plants stave off shit like that. So finally on Sunday, I woke up and I decided to pump myself up, and I did just that. I drank my little cup of coffee, and instead of just sitting around and not doing things, not knowing what to do with myself on a Sunday, thinking like, hey, you know, that's okay, it's your day off, I actually did put in some work, and I went and pulled down and ripped down the cucumber wall that was dying. And I fixed up, I zhuzhed up my tomato plants in an effort to hopefully they will all turn red before the summer is over. But yeah, I'm proud of myself because that was a few hours worth of work. And then after that, I proceeded to go to the meat market, the grocery store, and the pet food store. So full day on Sunday.
Okay.
Proud of me.
Look at you go.
And I was in bed by 9:30. That's a little cherry on top there. It's not normally I get to have all of those things. And on Saturday, I accomplished socializing. Like, I'm feeling strong.
Yeah. See, since I over-peopled, I did a lot of peopling on Saturday. I didn't really people much at all. I didn't leave the house on Sunday. It actually took me a little while to get motivated.
Yeah, you're going to really have to figure that out come grease time, sis, because you have a lot of socializing to do.
My only goal when I go to Greece, as far as like socializing goes, is to make one of those TikTok videos where the girls say like, I'm here for the monuments, and then just show up a bunch of pictures or videos of the men that they meet, you know,
men.
They're like bartender, their server, their captain.
I genuinely want you to do your best to get a selfie with each one of those monuments.
I have a selfie stick on the way.
Good. I want you to go sightseeing and capture all of the monuments, please and thank you.
That's what I said. Like, that's my socializing goal.
I went to Greece for the sightseeing montage. I see it now. Yeah, when you get back, we'll make the footage. It'll be great. We'll do it together. I have a vision.
Yeah. So it's my eat, pray, love adventure.
Shut the fuck up. I mean, you did just say, well, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. So maybe it is your eat, pray, love. I don't know.
Yeah. But we're setting very low goals, bare minimum of just capturing pictures of beautiful European men.
You know what? Whatever makes you happy. I'm here to support your happiness, your dreams. I'm not your buzzkill. That's somebody else's job.
So over the next 2 weeks, we will having replays. No new episodes.
No new friends. No new episodes. There's a theme here.
But if you liked what you heard today, please rate, review, subscribe. It means a lot to us to get those numbers up and for people to actually
listen,
submit them. I mean, it's very helpful in the algorithm.
Let's just put it that way.
So if you could please follow us also on social media. On Instagram at homance_chronicles. You can request a hoe of history for us to do in the DMs or comments. And you can get homance merch on my Etsy shop, Etsy.com/shop/Nicole Bonneville. Yep, that one's it.
Just search Nicole Bonneville in Etsy. You'll find her.
That's what it is. And you can also email us a hoe of history request at homancepodcast@gmail.com. So thanks for listening.
Yeah. And homance the fuck out. Germany coming.
Germany.
Germany. Greek. Greece. Greece.
I was like, don't have me ending up in the wrong country.
Oh, God. I didn't mean that. Universe, I take that back. Homance out.